It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Starting this summer, La Roche College is offering a first-of-its-kind two-week global development and humanitarian aid training program at La Roche for people interested in working in humanitarian and emergency aid. There are many activists, students, and professionals in different fields considering working in the humanitarian and emergency aid field, and this course could be an introduction to this particular career path. I'm joined now in Studio A by Jeff Ritter. He's chair of Communication, Media, and Technology at La Roche College. Jeff, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
And also with us is Astrid Kirsten, professor of management at La Roche. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
If you have a comment or question for our guests, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Jeff, let me start with you. I'm guessing that there are people, when they hear about disasters or natural disasters, catastrophic events throughout the world or even here in the United States, they immediately want to get involved and figure out some way that they can help. How does this program help these people address what they would like to do? Because it's not a matter of just showing up at the site, is it?
Yeah, I've heard people tell me they thought, you know, most of the people who were helped out in these areas were volunteers. Well, it's actually almost the complete opposite. There's a huge number of professionals who work specifically in these kinds of situations who go there to work on food, security, shelter, health, education, all the things that people need desperately, whether it's a natural disaster or a man-made refugee crisis. And they've got training, experience, and they get paid, of course, to do these jobs. And people do them as careers for many, many years. Very rewarding and interesting, exciting careers, sometimes dangerous, of course. But it's a very difficult field to get into. So that's how we initially started this, was I got curious about it. How do people get into this? And I found there's training organizations. And it turned out to be, with a little bit of research and a lot of help with Astrid, a unique opportunity for La Roche to help to prepare people for these kinds of actual jobs, careers, really.
And Astrid, how did you two collaborate on this?
Well, so the exciting part is that Jeff initially went to a conference that tells you a little bit about where the field is right now. Obviously, there have been people working in this field for decades. The new development over the last couple of years is working towards identifying key competencies and standards for the field, because it's been a type of situation where obviously you send people out, work has to be done right away, you don't have time to train people and get them up to speed. But every organization kind of had its own standards, its own ideas, its own training. So the last couple of years, organizations have started to get together and say, what are the key competencies? And how can we work, how can we collaborate between agencies to develop good training models? So Jeff originally went to the conference in Geneva. And came back, was very excited. I looked at it. I got very excited. So then we started to collaborate and really look at that particular process. So what I think is exciting about our model is, because we are starting fresh, we have been able to develop the model based on those competencies and standards.
While programs exist worldwide to provide training, apparently few occur or exist within the United States. Do we know why that is?
Well, it's just, I think, an unusual thing. It might be more part of a European student's experience, or more related to their growing up. They're closer to Africa, closer to Asia, maybe, something like that. So they've been doing it for years, but I think American students have really, in recent years, geared more towards development. There's a lot of master's degrees program in development. People want to help out in developing countries. They think it's partially fundraising, but it's also creating development plans and long-term agendas for things like that. But yeah, it's just an unusual thing that hasn't occurred here very much. It's only at Harvard. For Harvard and Tufts students, there's a program at Fordham, which is a month long, only really for people already working in the field to get more management training. And so this is a unique thing for the United States, for a place for young people to get the training that can really jumpstart a career in these actual fields.
And the this, I'm sorry, go ahead, Austria.
Yeah, no, maybe the other thing to add to it also is that the entry into the field is a little bit difficult because even in Europe, most of the programs there are master's level programs. They're expensive master's level programs. And the same here. So what we try to do is sort of take a different approach and say, what is it that we can offer? Because La Roche College is very committed as an institution to making a difference globally. So what is it that we can offer to entry-level students that is affordable, that does not involve the entire master's degree project? I mean, I did that myself. I have a master's degree in international affairs, recently went back to school to kind of look at where the field is, complete another master's. But those are expensive type of paths, career paths to get there. So we are trying to position ourselves a little bit differently and working specifically with an agency, a British agency, that already offers that kind of training.
So it's not as extensive as going to graduate school. You can do this. You can do this as a student, and I'm guessing it's open to people outside of the college who are not necessarily enrolled.
Anybody from anywhere, yeah.
412-246-2002. If you'd like to join the conversation, have you volunteered at a disaster site or been an emergency aid worker in the past? How might this training help someone who does what you've done, and how interested are you in perhaps pursuing this particular career path? We'd like to hear from you. 412-246-2002 is our phone number, 412-246-2002. Our email address, ESSPGH@WESA.FM, and you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Jeff, you mentioned the handful of schools that are already doing this type of training or that offer this kind of coursework. And it's, you mentioned three Eastern elite schools, Harvard, Tufts, both in Boston, and then, or the Boston area, and Fordham in New York. So how unusual is it for someone, for a college like La Roche, the small college in the Pittsburgh area, in the what some people perceive as the middle of nowhere, to be doing this?
Well, it is completely unique. It is. And for the Harvard and Tufts program, not only that, but obviously Eastern and Elite, but you have to be in the medical student of some kind or nursing student to get into the program. They want people who are doing medical training to do that. It is very unusual. But, you know, it relates to other things in our region. Two people who live here actually helped us develop this program. One is Andy Pugh. He's currently in Haiti, the Oxfam country director in Haiti. He moved to Pittsburgh probably eight years ago, something like that. He worked before for CARE USA in New York, and he's had a lot of experience, and he helped us design the program. Another, and he's on the advisory board. Another one is Jason O'Connor. He's currently in the Sudan. He moved to Pittsburgh, too. He's originally a Canadian but married a Pittsburgher. He works in security training for the UN. He's in Sudan right now. He'll be back in time. They're both going to be back in time to be a part of the program. So our region does have ties to this field with some very amazing people already doing that kind of work.
Another person maybe worth mentioning, too, is Terry Jegel, who's had decades of disaster relief experience. And these are all people who are going to be directly involved in our program. So that kind of makes it more exciting, too, I think, is that we have this kind of global orientation, but using very much Pittsburgh-based expertise as well.
412-246-2002, the number to call. Let's go to Chris in Moon, who would like to lend us a comment. Chris, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, hello. Congratulations on your on the project. Don't forget Brothers Brothers, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I have one comment and one question. The comment is the reason Europeans are more into disaster relief is much of their history is based on immigration. Irish aid, for example, is quite big, but the Irish nation, of course, barely survived after the potato famine and the wars. The question is, are you going to have a course that sort of mitigates the whole issue of corruption in disaster relief? And I'm thinking specifically of the criticism of Haiti, where hundreds of millions of dollars were spent yet very little that went into infrastructure, and a lot of people are in the same boat that they were before. And I think that came from the president of Haiti. Am I right? I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you, Chris. And Astrid, why don't you handle that?
So I totally agree that when we look at corruption and misspent money, I mean, there's a long history of that in humanitarian aid. There's a lot of money that's given there. And then there's quite a bit that's been mismanaged. I think one of the reasons for the development of the standards, the competency standards that I mentioned before, is to address exactly that issue so that when you have people in the field, they are now trained in not only providing actual relief, but also management of money, assessment, tracking projects, designing projects, looking at assessment, where is the money going, and have we actually accomplished anything? There's so much in that field that has changed, even since I took my initial master's. If you go back today, there is at least 30 to 40% of what happens in the field has to do with accountability, has to do with standards, and has to do with assessment.
That's a common problem, this idea that when you've got a generous country like the United States of America that is providing aid to countries, disaster relief, if you will, and oftentimes it doesn't get into the right hands. There are so many corrupt governments out there. For every government that has some kind of integrity, there seem to be two or three that do not. And that's the whole reason that Roberto Clemente, for example, when he went to Nicaragua, ended up going there in the first place because he wanted to personally accompany the aid because it wasn't getting into the right hands. How do you get it into the right hands? Because you're dealing with, you talked about danger, Jeff. I mean, this would be probably the most dangerous situation you're presented with when you go overseas is the threat of someone who does not want you to take the money out of their hands.
Well, the organizations are changing, and they've been learning for years. And they know they've got to be accountable to their donors, and they've got to be accountable to the recipients of aid. So it's a big part of what Red R does, is learning about the processes.
That's the English group.
That's the English group that's going to be working with us, is teaching about, and you get to experience and really understand from a simulation and from a theoretical point of view what the role of the aid organizations is and how it's regulated. What your real safeguards are, and what the protections are, and really it's the way the organizations have changed. A lot of processes is not as much flying in and donating as much as there is now trying to create livelihoods on the ground. Help people get back on their feet who need food. Let's get the farmers or people who are nearby who have food to be the providers rather than everything being flown in, because it changes dynamics significantly. So it's been a long learning curve for big and complex organizations in difficult situations. So there's no doubt about it, but it's learning.
Yeah, I think you have to remember, though, that a lot of times these areas are complex. It's not only having to do with corrupt governments. I spent the fall term in the Solomon Islands working with women against gender violence, big problem in that area. So one of the things I was trying to do is work with the local women, organize them, do grant writing to get some money to that area to support it. Well, the grant writing process is set up for accountability, but it also means that it is now impossible, literally, for local women on the ground to access this money. I can go there and write grants, and I got money for them. But in terms of the requirements that are now in place for tracking money and making that process accountable, it's totally inconsistent with local conditions. I mean, the requirements that they have are unrealistic. So lots of times it's not a simple process, and it not only has to do with corruption, but it also has to do with difficulties that occur when we take Western standards of accountability and technology and tracking and put them into completely underdeveloped situations. So
there's
long-term,
a whole set of logistical concerns.
Exactly. And some of them are as basic as the grant writing process wants you to have an address in an island where there are no addresses.
We're talking about the 2-week Global Development and Humanitarian Aid Training Program at La Roche College with two people who are at La Roche: Jeff Ritter, Chair of Communication, Media, and Technology, and Astrid Kirsten, Professor of Management at La Roche. And the course is a 2-week course. There seems to be, you talked about the learning curve here, Jeff. it seems as though is that enough time to really get somebody a deep understanding of what of how to do this kind of work?
Well, we're going to start off with some online material before they get there, so they'll have an introduction to the field before they get there. We assume we're hoping to get people who have some background or related background, at least some understanding of globalization as well, so there's not completely a brand new context. But yeah, it is, and it's intense, and that's why it's something people do to get rapidly involved in something. Is you're with a whole cohort of people for 2 weeks, you're going to you're going to live in this context and be working on it intensely. But is it enough time? It's enough time to get the way of thinking about the field and do some collaborative work, creative work, to understand the way people work in these situations and the legal frameworks around it. So there's a lot of material, but it's also an experiential kind of learning situation too that we hope it'll be.
So the two-week program is actually the face-to-face program. And before that, there will be a two-week program online that's designed to do some basic competency assessment, give them exposure to the legal framework, the historical framework, some of the operational standards. And then the program is also followed by, again, a two-week post-online program that sort of solidifies some of that knowledge. So that's a total of 6 weeks, which I still think is limited, but I think it's a whole lot better than people going in without all of that.
So then what Astrid, is the overall goal here?
The overall goal is to really keep in mind we're trying to target two populations. One is students that have just come out of a program and want to enter the field. So we want to provide them with basic competencies that will have them ready to act in the field, and that includes basic things like understanding the framework, keeping yourself safe, knowing what is needed, etc. The second population we're targeting is people who are already in the field that simply need more focused training in some of the new things like the standards and expectations and processes that are in place.
Are we seeing more of a need for this kind of thing, if for no other reason than just looking back over the last, say, 7 or 8 years or so of natural disasters and man-made situations as well? But going back to Katrina and up through Superstorm Sandy, just here domestically, and then overseas, you've got the earthquake in Haiti, you have the earthquake and tsunami in Japan. It just seems that there's more disasters out there to deal with.
It's hard to tell, but certainly it's possible we'll have more natural disasters, weather-related, in the future. But the real thing that's going on is there's more money being invested in the disasters at the time when they take place, because we've learned that investing when it happens is going to make things better in the long run, quicker. If you wait any amount of time, even the revolution in Libya, one of the things that happened during that time, it was about a year before Gaddafi was completely out of there, emergency education began in Libya because we knew that students were missing school. Schools were just not happening. So emergency education happened because even students missing a year of school is going to put them behind for a long, long time. So they invented emergency education for that context, and now it's a big part of the entire emergency humanitarian aid structure.
Is that type of thing going on in Syria now, for example, where so many people are being displaced?
It is. There's emergency education. There's schools have already been, temporary schools have started.
It's fascinating, and we're going to continue this discussion. We will swap out guests. Astrid Kirsten, who's been with us, thank you so much for being with us on Essential Pittsburgh telling us about the foundation for this program. When we come back, we'll discuss the practical application of the program. That's when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh, and we've been talking about a program being offered at La Roche College, a first-of-its-kind two-week global development and humanitarian aid training program at La Roche for people interested in working in humanitarian and emergency aid. So the question is, once they get the training, what about the practical application of that particular craft and the things that they learn. And we were continuing now with Jeff Ritter, who is one of the founders of this program at La Roche. He's the chair of communication, media, and technology at the college. And joining us now is a woman who is the deputy director of Global Links Medical Relief and Development Program, talking about the real-world application of this training. Angela Garcia is with us here in Studio A. Angela, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
What are some of the most common situations that aid workers encounter?
Wow, that's a very large question. But I think some of the things that Astrid and Jeff had mentioned, security is one of the big ones, as well as cultural sensitivity. No matter what region in the world aid workers are working in, there has to be training on how to work effectively in the community where either the aid, the emergency, the disaster assistance is taking place. Those are key, and those are not something that is generally taught in a typical class. The cultural sensitivity and needs assessment, I would say, is the third aspect. How do you go in quickly, assess, and set up a project so it is going to be effective, measurable, and accountable?
How much of a challenge is it to go from this classroom and online training to a real-world situation? I would imagine that some of the people who have not been in this type of situation before, even though they've gone through 6 weeks of training, when you get there, how much of a deer-in-the-headlights type of aspect is there to this that you have to overcome?
Well, because this is a new type of training, as they've mentioned, a lot of what people would learn in the past was really on the ground. So whether they were working, supporting an organization, Global Links is a fairly small aid agency. I mean, our staff is 22 people compared to a USAID agency where they're probably going to go through a lot more structured training. We do look for people that have had international experience. And generally, it's learning that. So they're not going to be the deer in the headlights with us. They're going to have already had international experience. So when Jeff started speaking to us last year about this, it really interested us because they're going to get more structure. They're going to get those frameworks in a setting and then be paired up with an international site placement. So that sounds like a promising take away that deer in the headlights look so that you know what to expect despite the fact that it's always going to be changing.
And the first thing that's going to happen with you with any organization is you're going to get an orientation as soon as you arrive. And part of that's going to be your security orientation. You're going to know from your organization is going to be very careful to take care of you to make sure you're understanding exactly what's going on as soon as you get there. They've made a big investment in you just in hiring you or even as a volunteer. Mm-hmm. They brought you over as a volunteer. There are thousands of people who want to do these things as volunteers just to do them because they have a good heart. But they're not going to take most people unless they have some sort of training like we're offering. But you're going to get an orientation, a security orientation, and they're going to be very careful with you to make sure you're not putting anything immediately that's going to panic you. And they're looking for people like we're looking for people who, like Angela says, have some sort of international experience, have done some sort of volunteering, have done some sort of compassionate work. It's not an adventure. It's something that you really have to be committed to.
Angela, what are some of the needs that, from your extensive travel, that you've seen with this?
Well, I would say we work in the health realm, and we actually follow protocols that are set by the World Health Organization. So we're working in areas that really have resource deficiencies. So a lot of the times going and assess a project, you can have this background, whether you learned it on the ground, whether you learned it through a curriculum. It's them being nimble enough to get to learn a community and get to assess their needs and being able to establish a dialogue and then bring collaborative partners together because that's really going to make a project successful. So learning how to establish those collaborations, set up a framework, getting people to the table to get the input, that's really going to be key. And that's what we've seen a lot. We have a team right now out in the field. I'm in Honduras doing just that. And despite their training, and we have our CEOs on the trip who's had 24 years of on-the-ground experience throughout the Americas, and our program officer who's formerly worked with the World Bank, their challenge was that their computer got a virus on the first day, and they're using their cell phones, but they didn't have Wi-Fi access the whole time. So even the documentation, getting information back and forth, And all of our partners are in the same situation. They don't necessarily have access to resources or even the human resources as project managers, things that we take for granted. That's how things become successful. It's not the lack of, as Jeff said, those people with the good heart that want to do the work. They want to go help. They have to have that training and really be able to establish and be nimble enough to be able to react to the situation that they're placed in.
And people with skills, they may not think about it, but somebody who's a warehouse manager, somebody who's a nurse, an EMT, a police officer, a database manager, a computer person, there's a need. That's who goes in on the first plane in some cases, and an HR person, media people too, on the first plane. There's the ones who they need right away to start organizing the structure of what's going to happen. And people with those skills may have never thought of doing this kind of work, but with just additional little additional training and their experience, boy, they could be very valuable in the field.
The logistics that you mentioned are really key to setting up any, whether it's immediate disaster or humanitarian relief, people that can manage the logistics and get those set up quickly so that the first responders or the physicians or the food aid deliveries can respond are key.
Are there some disasters you simply cannot prepare for? On this two-year anniversary of the earthquake and tsunami in Japan, that's one thing that comes to mind.
I think all disasters are challenging to prepare for. The one there's key frameworks I think that go across any disasters, and that the industry is learning more and more. As Astrid and Jeff referenced, there are more frameworks being adapted. The one key thing is that on the ground expertise and knowing what resources are available in country. Because one thing as the international humanitarian aid community does not want to do is displace resources that are available near a disaster. Because what they need post any disaster is to get those local economies up and running. So knowing that there's a respect for the culture and the economy that is there, what can be sourced locally, what can, in terms of human resources, product resources, what can come in locally, that's going to be universal across anything, because then you're infusing for the future development, not just for the immediate delivery of aid.
Yeah, that's one of the most important aspects of emergency aid now, is it's dovetailed with development. They're no longer separate fields. Everything in emergency has to be coordinated with what's going on with development for long term, and it can't be just a short-term fix anymore. Mm-hmm. They start out sometimes creating livelihoods on the ground. Who can create a store? Who can create a business that's going to serve this disaster right now? And then keep going, even training people on site.
And Japan knew that, and that's why they refused some initial offers of aid, because they knew they could source materials from within their own country, and that would be preferable, get that money back into the economy, keep it within Asia. And then what do we need that's more specialized, and how do we get that here?
With more and more of these programs popping up, or at least there are the three that we mentioned, that Jeff mentioned on the East Coast, and then now La Roche is pioneering a course that's much more accessible to people. Assuming that there are other places that take La Roche's lead on this, how much will that help an effort like yours, Angela, with Global Links, simply because you'll have more trained people available?
It's a wonderful thing to think we would be able to tap into somebody with that qualification. Right now, like I said, we are looking at employees that have trained really with larger agencies, because we don't have as many resources to do as much orientation as we'd like. So we have to look for veterans of other organizations with the experience. And knowing that there'll be these programs, particularly La Roche, how can we work together better with them? It's really a great sign for the future.
And Jeff, how do you see this program growing?
Well, we're doing it for 2 weeks this summer. We could go do it again for 2, 4, 6 weeks, two or three programs in a row next summer, depending on the demand. There's a website. People are interested, just look up La Roche and Humanitarian on Google, and you'll go right to our website and application.
Very good. A new global development and humanitarian aid training program at La Roche. Here to talk about it with us has been Jeff Ritter, Chair of the Communications Department at La Roche, Chair of the Communication, Media, and Technology Department. We also heard from Astrid Kirsten, Professor of Management there. And joining us for this segment, Angela Garcia, Deputy Director of Global Links Medical Relief and Development Program. Thanks to all of you for being here to discuss this very important work with us.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
It was a pleasure.